We now go to the Windsor, Detroit area, where an alien craft has just landed.
I want you men to surround the craft. Chris, you stay with me.
What are we going to do, Jeff?
We're going in.
What? They're extraterrestrials.
What are you doing here? Why have you come here?
We have come here to listen to 99.1 FM CJAM.
99.1 FM CJAM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
Involved in the Windsor music scene for many years, eventually opening his own recording studio called Rockery Records, I'm joined today by Scott Warren of the band Vultures. We'll find out more about Scott's music history, the Rockery Records story, and why the question mark. Please welcome this week's guest, drummer for Vultures, Scott Warren. Hey, Scott.
Big JD.
I want to talk about what got you interested in music and when you started playing, what instrument perhaps, if it wasn't actually drums in the beginning. Did you start out as a drummer?
There was a handful of failed attempts at actually starting to be a musician throughout my life. The first thing I actually dove into was, some of my earliest memories were singing on my way to school or whatever it was, on a swing set somewhere, because that's where most good singing happens, right? When you're 4 or 5 years old, is on a swing set. Merry-go-round, just heading to school, yep. Doing that kind of thing. First memory was certainly singing, and not just what I was hearing on the radio or albums or anything like that. Didn't come from a particularly musical household either. We were, my parents just had a minor appreciation for music, my dad more so.
Were they supportive, though, at the time of you, once you got into...
It was kind of one of those things where nobody really knew. I was doing it on my own, but I had a fascination with music from day one that I can remember, as far back as I can remember. I had a record collection that was about half my height by the time I was five.
So what were you listening to at five?
Oh.
So what were you listening to, though, back then? What was your influence?
Outside of Michael Jackson, and all the way back to Off the Wall stuff, not so much Jackson 5, yeah. but outside of Michael Jackson, who was probably my first big, huge influence just musically, he kind of cut through everything else that was on the radio, and I was a fan at that young age. Outside of that, I was going by cool album covers.
So, oh, okay,
I
mean, yeah.
I had Bat Out of Hell.
I think a lot of kids do.
I had Bat Out of Hell.
Probably some Molly Hatchet maybe back then, did you have?
No, my dad was into Croce and Stevie Wonder, Earth, Wind, and Fire. So not only badass covers and albums and things like that, but once you actually put those things on, it was like, what? You got horns, you got soul, you got Stevie slamming on the piano.
So you had appreciation for that stuff back then?
That was what set me off. But again, not coming from a musical family, it wasn't really directed that way. Plus, I was also pretty keen in school and also really into sports and athletics at an early age, too. So kind of missed the boat early on, took a stab at learning keyboards, and I insisted on synthesizers and keyboards, not piano.
Right, yeah.
Didn't want to learn piano. I wanted to learn keyboards and synths.
Piano doesn't sound as cool, does it?
I think that was the reasoning, actually. A lot of the bands that I was coming up to throughout those, well, it was the mid-80s, right? Early 80s to
a lot
mid-80s.
Of synth
and- yeah, it was synth-based stuff. Nobody's playing, well, other than like Christopher Cross or Michael McDonald or something, you're not hearing a lot of piano that's inspiring to me, right?
Yeah.
So it was synths or nothing. And so I got a teacher who was going to teach me synth and all that fun stuff, and I understood I had to learn some piano fundamentals. And so I bit the bullet on that, and then sure enough, two months into this, I'm in grade two or grade three or something. 2 months into this, this guy, this teacher who I was just loving, I loved this guy. He was great, and he was super cool, and he had long hair, and he was like into all the cool music. He goes on somewhere else, right? And he leaves, and so now I'm left with this D-bag teacher who I didn't like, which was, you know, precursor to the rest of my life, me and teachers not getting along, or authoritarian figures in general. Not my bag. So it killed my vibe for that, and I gave up the keyboard thing. That was it. Mm-hmm. The next opportunity I had was grade seven. Grade seven, they're like, hey, you got to join the school band.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, okay. Free instrument, free teaching. Why not? So what do you want to play? Well, I'm going to play the snare drum. Sorry, we've got somebody that plays the snare drum. What else would you like to play? Baritone sax. I'm like 4'3", 85 pounds, right? Yeah. Well, you can't physically play the baritone sax. What else would you like to play? The flute. We're not doing the flute. So again, aborted attempt number two, gone. That was grade seven. Didn't get into it then either. Fast forward to September of 93, and my brother asks for a drum kit for his 13th birthday or something like that. So I'm 15 or 16, and he gets the drum kit for his birthday. Within 2 months, I'm jamming with guys from my school. I just picked it up and kind of ran with it. And within, I think, 5 or 6 months after just sitting down at the drum kit for the first time, I'm playing my first Battle of the Bands with some of my best friends from school, and the rest is history. That was 94 by the time I got to stage. The first and only time I was ever nervous playing a show also was that very first show. But so 94, finally the circle was closed and I was able to be a musician, started as a drummer. In practice.
I think that circle's still open because you got a lot going on still. Who are some of the guys that you were playing with like back then? Are they still playing today?
Well, yeah, a lot of those guys kind of fell away from it after high school. Some of them did finish their post-secondary. Others did the family stuff. Others were just running around trying to find, you know, a life of some kind, whether it was here, whether it was Toronto, whether it was BC. And yeah, so I mean, that original core group of guys, we lasted about 2 or 3 years. And then I went on and did project all through until today. Mm-hmm. Still doing the same kind of vibe, but still in touch. Still some of the best memories, have all that stuff on cassette.
Yeah.
You know, cool. So I'm able to...
On cassette? You haven't transferred that yet?
Oh, God. There's hours, like hours and hours.
Some of your music history, was that captured at all on the rock wall, Tom Lusher's rock wall?
Oh, yeah. I may or may not have actually been there when Tom first tabled the idea of it. I'm pretty sure I was either in on those early conversations, or I was one of the first people that he came to, him knowing he knows a lot of my history as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Tenure, if nothing else. Right. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, let's start this thing branching out. And yeah. And I remember the first iterations of it and when it finally went to the wall and, So, I mean, I've got all kinds of sinewy strands on that mm-hmm. great big huge installation, which has now been boiled down to a pretty sweet little poster sized thing, high res poster that they managed to get some photos done and then stitched them all together, and it looks great. I have one.
Sweet. Yeah cool. And talking about, you know, recording music, has the recording studio and recording artists and doing what you do in the music business change the way that you look at, listen to, or perceive other instruments and that sort of thing? Or
Not the perception of other instruments, but definitely I think that the thing that it's had the biggest effect on, obviously outside of the actual art of recording, mm-hmm. has been the way that I actually perform. In terms of how I play for the mics and how I actually perform in the studio, whether I'm playing drums or guitar or bass or I'm singing or whatever I'm doing. And also those lessons I've been able to translate to other musicians that come in here and record, including my band.
Mm-hmm. And that was my next question, actually. How is it influenced performing? But thank you for answering that ahead of time. Let's talk about Vultures. When did that group start, and what type of music are you guys doing? And
well, Vultures used to Vultures used to be with an exclamation point. That was actually how we started the band. This was back in 2006, I think, or 7. The idea started brewing. We were coming to the end of the band that the first band that I fronted, which was called Lone Locust, and we were coming to the end of that. And we wanted to get something off the ground to transition out of that, because we just, all of us love playing. All of us being, you know, me and my best friends, and at the time my counterpart, my female counterpart. Mm-hmm. And so we brainstormed for a little while, both musically and nomenclaturally, and came up with Vultures with the exclamation point, which we thought was super clever at the time. And that was about 5 minutes before everybody and their brother had a had some kind of punctuation after their band name.
Right.
So we were at the front end of that. And then a couple years into Vultures, we had a change in lineups, a change in philosophy, a change in just the band itself on several levels. Even personally, a lot of us were going through some personal changes in terms of family stuff, in terms of geographical location, in terms of what we wanted out of music, mm-hmm. and all that. And so we marked that occasion really by changing the exclamation point to a question mark.
Cool.
Yeah, that remains to be seen. It may be cool, it may not be cool. But
well, you don't often see it, so I mean...
No, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And you know what? If you really want to get deep about it, question mark, you know, there was a lot of questioning going on at the time. There was a lot of upheaval. There was a lot of change. There was a lot of unknown. So it was apropos then, as it is now, to slap the question mark on there and kind of let it linger.
But there's no... It's not necessary to say Vultures? Or do you get that? Or?
Yeah, we get that. We get that a lot. It's a talking point. It's almost an icebreaker now. Well, mm-hmm. it's, you know, how do I say your name? If it's, you know, if somebody's announcing the band at a show or if we're doing something for radio or, you know, what do we, do I just say Vultures? Is it just straight yeah. Vultures?
How do you want me to announce you guys?
Exactly. Put your own flair on it. You know, if you want to go with the Vultures, it's kind of.
It's a whole thing. Like, it's like a mood ring. You can say it many different ways.
Yeah, it's a signature. Really is. Like if the person that's interviewing is going to say Vultures, it's just so out of context, it's kind of fun.
So what do you do if it's a question? You got to kind of do that twice. Vultures?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's cool.
The old double rays.
Lone Locust.
That one was an inside joke. Okay. That was the band that immediately preceded Vultures. That was a lot of fun. Played with the Fry Brothers, the notorious Fry Brothers, Brian okay. and Jamie from currently Graham Maris. Originally back in the day, they were more known for being an Apostrophe / Royal Dose. And also with Dave Hool, who at the time was in Jet Trio and is still Jet Trio's resurrected and they're back doing what they do, or at least they did. And so got to work with Dave for a little bit too. So that band was Andy and I. Andy is the guitar, one of the two guitar players for Vultures.
Mm-hmm.
And my longtime writing partner, he and I have been writing for years and years and years together. So that was my first fronting band and the band that immediately preceded Vultures.
And who's writing in Vultures? You guys or everybody?
Yeah, Vultures is a four piece these days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the kit and happy to be there in Vultures. I have, you know, needs and wants to control the way music gets written and voiced and all that other thing that I get to kind of get out of my system with This Is War.
Mm-hmm.
And so happily just the drummer in Vultures, and I get to throw out my ideas casually instead of, you know, insisting on, you know, direction and that kind of thing. Because I've got, you know, three guys in my band that are just brilliant songwriters. It's easy for me just to sit back and let it happen and watch it happen and throw in my two cents when I feel like I really need to. That's uh-huh. it. Yeah.
Control the pace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, see, sports. I was a catcher growing up.
There you go.
Playing baseball. Uh-huh. So it's like, it's all the idea of being the team captain, right?
Right,
sitting back there and controlling the whole thing.
What CDs have you guys put out? How many?
It's a beautiful, convenient, and actually that's how Rockery Records was born, was out of necessity. We were writing, we being Andy and I back in the day, and Anderson when we were in Bombast. We were writing so much material, we had to track it to keep track of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually we just decided to get better at recording instead of just throwing mics up haphazardly and, well, hey, maybe we can just release this stuff. You know, digital recording was getting much better at the time, and access to better microphones and better processes and computing power and all that stuff. It was starting to become a little more affordable. This is back in the mid 2000s, so 2004, 2005. And so eventually Rockery Records was born of that necessity, mm-hmm. in order for us to demo stuff. And then eventually actually even put out our own releases. So with the Vulture stuff, there's a comprehensive library now of things that we've demoed and released throughout the entire 6 or 7 year existence of the band, which mm-hmm. is really nice. We've got our own little internal library as well as a library that we have released. We've released, geez, you know, I wish I knew off the top of my head, but I want to say it's, I know the pace is an EP a year, and I want to say for the past 5 years. So I think there are 5 EPs.
So might we see a box set in the near future or something, maybe?
Our retrospective. We're actually, Wake is the current release. Wake's a 4-song. We're looking more to get toward a multimedia angle. We've never dabbled in the video, something that you're very familiar and
I was going to say, I know a guy that does at. That. So
we've not ever dabbled in that area because, I mean, truthfully, I'm the one with most of the free time, and the free time is spent here at mm-hmm. the studio doing what it is I do here. So it's kind of been something that's eluded us, but that's kind of the next multimedia thing that we're going to tackle. We're always going to continue to write, record, and release material mm-hmm. and promote it properly as we see fit, usually with a show, occasionally with an actual physical release, occasionally with a download type release. But always with a show and always with the relatively appropriate amount of push on places like Facebook and we have our own website now, in fact, vulturesband.com.
Mm-hmm. Great. And we're going to hear some Vultures. Let's check out a tune. And when we come back, we'll talk more about recording, mastering, and Rockery Records. What are we spinning?
First song's called Control. And Control was our first stab at a dance tune. That was really the idea. We sat down and said, let's write a dance song.
So everybody will know what we're doing during the break.
Let's dance it up, pal. Come on, Big JD. You and me.
Oh,
you have an interesting career? You have an interesting life experience to share with others. If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking to Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca. We're back. Scott Warren, owner of Rockery Records and drummer for the local Windsor band Vultures, is here today. Scott, let's talk about your studio and recording. First thing I wanted to ask you about is, have you had any formal training, or did you, is this something that you just naturally progressed to? You'd spoken a bit about, you know, how you started Rockery, and that was just a natural progression and everything that you've learned. And
Just like everything else in my musical career, I'm doing air quotes right now, self-taught throughout the years. I'm a keen observer. So every time I've had the pleasure of getting into the studio with people that are learned and have been doing it for a lot longer than I have, I took those opportunities and paid attention. And I've always been keen on learning through the traditional periodicals, your Mix magazines, your Sound on Sound, and taking a real interest in that kind of stuff and trying to really interpret what I'm hearing when I sit behind the board versus what I've read and what I've written and what other people have recounted and what I've seen in action, and putting all those things into that pot, boiling it down. And just, I think the one thing, the one overriding thing that, that I've always said about recording, I know what I want it to sound like. So it's just, how do I get it there? That's it. All the other stuff, all the wonderful plugins, all the wonderful microphones, all the wonderful whatever, the performers, the cabling, all of that stuff.
Whatever it takes to get there.
It's a means to an end, because I know what I want it to sound like. And I think without that overriding vision, I wouldn't have been able to get to the point where I'd be confident enough to release my recordings, to record other bands, that things like that. My brother is a great resource. He actually was an OI Art grad, one of those overachiever types. Was hired at a real big professional studio in Toronto right out of school, and so I lean on him for the finer points. And
is he still away, or is he? Is
he worked there for God, probably the better part of a decade.
Wow. Okay.
And he's just, I guess, from what I've heard, in that industry there can be a bit of a glass ceiling if you're coming at it in terms of, or from the engineering side of things, especially in a bigger, more established studio. If you're an engineer, you're an engineer, and if you have designs on being a producer, I think the only thing you really can do is open your own studio. Those opportunities are few and far between, especially in a big city. There are a lot of them are cost prohibitive and things like that. So he's been really, really cool about, giving me what expertise it is that he can convey to somebody with the real book knowledge in recording, about the length of my pinky finger, but has also been extremely complimentary in how I've sort of gone at this thing of recording and having a studio.
Yeah.
And so it's cool.
But sometimes there's a big difference between somebody that's studied by the book and somebody that got into it naturally. I think honestly, in most cases, somebody that's natural at that brings a little more to the table.
It's not any different than,
I think, but you know,
it's not, to me, in my experience, it's not much or any different than a musician who was self-taught versus a musician that came up and was trained.
Same type of thing, really. Yeah,
it really is. I mean, you'll
usually find them more creative, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
man, I've always fallen on that side of the argument. I have a vested interest in proving that to be true. Mm-hmm. I am that guy. I'm the self-taught guy. Yeah. Everything I've done in life, everything has been completely self-taught. Problem with authority. Can't take instruction. You know what I mean? So you paint yourself into that corner. You really kind of have to lean on yourself to get out of it. Yeah, you can create. I think you can come at it from a different place where it kind of fails me. Both in the studio and as a musician, is I don't have fundamentals to fall back on when maybe I'm struggling in certain areas. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it just means everything takes just a little bit longer to get it where I want it to go. And that's fine, because I got all the time in the world. I don't, it's not like I'm drawing a salary. Thank you, day job.
What's your take on analog versus digital? I mean, your studio's digital. Have you dabbled at all in anything analog? I mean, post cassette tape?
Not myself, in terms of output from the studio, but I have had the opportunity to work with an analog studio on a couple different occasions.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And
so do you look for that warmth of analog in your, you know what I mean? And
I've never heard it duplicated ever.
Yeah.
Ever. I don't know that you can. It's just it's a mechanical process. And there's some kind of weird sort of really not even abstract magic. It's not an abstract thing. It's tangible. It's there. You can listen to it. It's kind of like the argument between digital workstations. Everybody says, well, 00. 00, man. 00. Guess what? Zero is not zero. They sound different. They just do. But, you know, I mean, Dave Grohl, one of my mm-hmm. heroes, right? He's on a huge kick right now about the analog thing, and has been actually for the last handful of years. And you can hear, you can just hear a difference in the output when it's done through an analog studio to tape, cut and edited. It just is different.
So what artists have come through Rockery Records? What kind of stuff have you done here in the past? Because I know that's changed over time. You're doing some different things here now, but you've had local artists in the studio and stuff?
Yeah, the roster. Diverse, to say the least. Mm-hmm. When Andy and I started Rockery, mm-hmm. We felt proficient enough to do this and to, you know, actually have other people come in and trust us with the output. That was probably only back 2005, 2006. But in those four years that he and I worked together, he's got a family and, you know, it's amazing. It's great. And he's still in Vultures and everything else. But, you know, now it's kind of just my thing here at the Rockery. We've done everything. We've done solo acoustic acts. We've done thrash metal, like death metal, just straight up rock and roll stuff. We've done ensemble-y kind of things, indie, all of it. Bands from local guys, bands from out of Toronto. We've made some really good lasting relationships. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's what I've scaled it since Andy backed away from the recording side of things. I've scaled it back to, I can barely keep up with myself, my own output, right? Mm-hmm. As it stands right now. So it's, I'd say, 95% Rockery-centric projects. And that includes pretty much anybody that's got a Rockery legacy. Any bands that I've worked with in the past or that Andy and I have worked with in the past, we'll always take them in because that's who got us to this point, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's just with Vultures and with This Is War, there's really not much time for anything else. But
one thing that I'm familiar with that you did recently was the Psycho thing, which is a metal project, but Freewheeling from Psycho's done a number of things with you, actually, and you've actually performed on some of that stuff. You're actually going to be in the upcoming video they did, actually.
Perfect example. Cool. Perfect example of the Rockery legacy. Like, I mean, he is actually that whole relationship that it touches on everything. Even forget about just studio work. I mean, we met Mike. Well, Andy met Mike through work. And it was like, oh, you do the studio thing. And Andy said, well, yeah, you used to play. He's like, well, yeah, man, I used to. Blah, 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 blah.
Got
to come
out. Got him all fired up again.
Let's get some tracks done. So he came out and worked with Andy and I to record a few songs. Next thing you know, we're renting a house from him. So we're living now in his rental house. And so, you know, it's just, it became this sort of like
inextricable relationship. It's crazy how the networks go, right?
It's ridiculous.
It's amazing, yeah.
I wonder how I met you, Big JD.
Yeah.
Might have been Freewheeling Mike. Might have been. But anyways, year after year, he's always got more material. He wants to come back. So he'll shut himself down for a week, come down Windsor from where he is now up in Trenton-ish. It's a whole big, you know, anything north of Puce, I'm not really good with geographically.
Where is Puce?
Puce.
So what are you primarily doing now? You're doing some other things with Rockery. You're doing some master. Are you getting some work from elsewhere?
Yeah, now that things have settled down with Vultures as a band, all four of us as individuals and having our own families and lives and things like that, Vultures is an ongoing thing, so we're constantly writing, recording, tracking, looking to put together shows, things like that. So that's a constant. Once every 2 years, I'll do a This Is War album, which is my solo project, and that takes a ridiculous amount of time to do because I do everything 99% of everything solo. In terms of instrumentation, all the recording I do myself, things like that. Anyways, it's a time-consuming thing. I've been doing a lot more mastering, mixing and mastering jobs. Mm-hmm. One project that I'm really proud of that just came out that I will mention, Supermansion, is the new Supermansion CD, Supermansion 2, and that involves guys from bands like Jet Trio, Grand Maris, Meg Farrington, Graham Maris, Dave Creed, Graham Maris, Dave Hool is the big principal behind it. Nick Belulli, who back in the day was in Porcelain Mary, just did the Saints Christmas CD, mm-hmm. with Burroughs and Jody Raffoul.
Yep.
Nick was part of the brain trust behind that album as well. My singer Anderson from Vultures was heavily involved in the tracking, the recording. Jeff from Jet Trio. This huge project came to me, and I was able to help Dave get it mixed and mastered out of the rockery here, and that was just released at the end of December with the Jet Trio show, and there's talk of getting that big huge all star band together and doing a Supermansion show. So that's mixing and mastering projects are something that are coming hot and heavy right now, which is really nice because it frees me up to continue to do Vulture stuff uninterrupted, or This Is War uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. I've got a band, a working band out of Phoenix that's going to be sending me a 16 or a 12 song soon. So what I mean? These are the things that just come in through connections, yep. that I've made throughout the years. So I'm not actively out. I don't need to be actively out running, mm-hmm. around looking for things to do. There's always way too much to do, which is great. It's good.
Yep. And due to time constraints, I guess it's nice to get a project that's already been recorded that you can just sit down and work your magic on.
Honestly, I really could live off of those types of projects. Tracking, recording, I love that stuff. It's a little more time intensive. So I don't mind keeping that to myself. I don't mind being selfish with the tracking part of it, with running mics and cables and all that fun stuff, which I do actually enjoy to some extent, but when it's with other people, it can be a little laborious at times. Mm-hmm. So yeah, having a mixing and mastering project come in is, man, it's great. It's a palate cleanser and thoroughly satisfying.
All roads lead to Vultures. We're going to take today's show home with another tune recorded at Rockery Records. And you can set us up with this tune. What are we going to hear next?
Yeah, this song's called Brain Jail. Brain Jail. And this was, again, with the Vultures process, you've got Mr. Anderson Luna, who's the lead singer, bass player. You've got and lyricist. You've got Andy Langmuir, who's the guitarist. You've got Jeff Riley, who's guitarist. Myself on drums, and I do pretty much all of the backing vocals, most of the backing vocals on the record as well. Brain Jail was another, let's get up here in the room and just hack out a tune. This one's a little off the beaten path compared to the rest of the Vultures library. But it's kind of why we dig it. It's a little bit fun, a little bit bouncy, a little bit groovy, and it kicks a little butt too.
Very cool. Thanks for being on the show, Scott.
Big JD, it was my pleasure.
We all know there's a lot of great talent in this city. Vultures is no exception, and neither is their drummer, owner of Rockery Records, Scott Warren. You'll find Rockery on Facebook as well as Vultures, or visit vulturesband.com. And be sure to keep an eye out there or from psychomusic.ca for the soon-to-be-released Psycho video for the song My Intentions Were Good, which was recorded at Rockery Records and has Scott Warren behind the kit in both the song and the video. Brain Jail from Vulture's Wake EP on You Talking to Me with Big JD. Thanks for listening.